Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I'm Russ Coleman, and co-hosting with me today will be Mike O'Connor and Yanis Janaeus. In this episode, we'll be looking back at the embarrassing 5-0 loss for Fulham against Brighton and Hove Albion. That's the only word I can use to describe this loss, embarrassing. And we'll be going through it with my co-host. Three of us will be going through it. And I look forward to breaking this down. I'll just start with my initial thoughts on this. What's crazy about this match is that if you look at the first 25 minutes, I'm just listening to it. I wasn't there, but based on everything that I've read, what I listened to, and everything that others have told me, Fulham were definitely dominating the beginning of this match. You know, again, they didn't score a goal. They didn't really create that much opportunities, but they were controlling the game. So they were in control for the first 25 minutes. It all falls apart after they give up that penalty, and we're going to be talking about that, but it goes beyond that. It's, you know, again, that was the starting of Fulham going downhill. We have so much more that happened after that, and I thought I would start the show while I wait for my co-host to join me, reading some of the head coach reaction, because I think this really nails not just this match, but the bigger picture with Fulham Football Club. And let's just start here. These are comments from Slavica Jokanović. And I'll just start here. I'm disappointed, said the head coach. We generally offer Brighton so many easy chances to score goals, and that's frustrating. After half an hour, they got a silly penalty and made it very difficult for us to compete. After that, it was set piece after set piece. At the beginning, we stuck to our plan. We moved the ball, and we maintained possession. After we made a few mistakes, we started to play long balls. We didn't show the character and try to continue with our game plan and play football. They scored 5 goals, and we're lucky they didn't score more. Asked after the spot kick that got the ball rolling for the Seagulls, Jokanović said, quote, we've given 11 penalties away this season. We need to maintain our concentration for longer periods. We can't put the referee in the dilemma where he needs to make a call whether it's a penalty or not. Another quote, quote, we're unable to defend set pieces. We've conceded more than 30 goals from these kinds of situations. It's very complicated to recover after those set pieces. We've now conceded another 3 set pieces tonight. We cannot compete for important things in the future if we're unable to defend set pieces. If we want to be competitive next season, we have to improve, but we also have to be thinking about this season still. We're not safe, and that's clear. After 3 good games, we've not shown the same face tonight. And those are comments from the Fulham head coach, Slavica Jokanović, very revealing, and I will be talking to my Cottage Talk co-host about those 30 goals, big picture, off of set pieces and 11 penalties. That, to me, is horrible, and I definitely want to get our thoughts on my Cottage Talk co-host. We'll take Yanis is on the line. Yanis, how you doing, my friend?
The cats are back, I'm afraid. Get out.
Yanis, how you doing, my friend?
Good. I'm good. It's going to be an interesting discussion today, but I don't think I'm as negative as a lot of fans probably are, as disappointing a result as it was on Friday night.
Sure. And listen, it's understandable. Listen, fans are very upset, you know, after the match. Understandable the last couple of days. But you know, if you look at the big picture, like you and I will be during the show, it's one match. We're concentrating on this one match. But the other big picture, Giannis, that I wanted to talk about to start the show is something that Slavica Jokanović really honed in on. And that's all the set pieces Fulham have given up, not just in this match, three, but also overall in this season and in penalties in general. What are your thoughts about what Slavica shared about the set piece issues, the penalty issues, and, you know, just overall about our poor defending here?
Well, I put on Facebook that, you know, I think his comments after the game told the story. To say that we've been absolutely bloody awful defending set pieces this year and giving away penalties would be probably the understatement of the millennium. It's been a train wreck. Let's be blunt about this. And I think I read between the lines in terms of what Slava's saying. He has acknowledged that things really need to change for next year if we're going to drastically improve. But I read between the lines that what he is saying is that I'm going to make sure I get defenders in this club that can know how to defend set pieces, and the midfield are drilled in terms of defending set pieces. If you look at, I had to have a good laugh last night, Russ, because of course Aston Villa were, you know, confirmed as being relegated.
Yes.
And the big thing on Twitter now is Villa fans going on about, well, one season and we're going to be returning. They have no idea what division they're coming into. They
Absolutely.
Really, such a tough division. And I think Slava's realised that so many goals in this division are created from set pieces. And let's face it, we've given away some really stupid penalties as well this year. Another one, yes, really on Friday, that set the ball rolling. So he knows his work is going to be cut out. But I think, you know, reading between the lines, he's also looking at the players. He already knows the players he wants to get rid of at the end of the year.
I totally agree with that, Giannis. And that, to me, is something that I want to talk about today. I also want to talk about on the preview show that I'll be doing tomorrow, you know, because this is one match, and we're going to hone in on this one match, but let's look at the big picture. Let's look at the defending, because it all came out in this match. We've seen it throughout the entire season. It doesn't matter who the manager or head coach is, whether it's Kit, whether it's Stuart Gray, whether it's Peter Grant or Slavica Jokanović. These guys cannot defend set pieces. It needs to be fixed. It needs to be addressed. And if these players aren't good enough, he needs to ship them out and bring in new defenders. That's what
Absolutely.
I have come to the conclusion on this. If he thinks that he has players that he wants to move on with defending, fine. But if these players aren't good enough for him and he's convinced of it, they need to be gone next season. And,
Absolutely.
And this match really encapsulated all the issues that we've had. All the issues. What is so frustrating, Giannis, is that we saw the good, we saw the bad, and we certainly saw the ugly. First 25 minutes, I listened to the match. I have not seen the match. Unfortunately, the replay is not available yet. I've seen the highlights, but I listened to it. And based on what I listened to, we were in the ascendancy. We didn't have many scoring chances, but we were controlling the match. It all changes after the penalty situation. But then it goes completely downhill from there, and that's where all the set-piece problems come into play.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, again, it's not about this one penalty. It really is, I mean, we're going to talk about it, but it really is an overall problem that they've had about defending. But before we go any further, it looks like Mike's on the line with us. I'm going to bring him on. Mr. O'Connor, how you doing?
Not too bad, Russ. Can you hear me just fine?
I can hear you great, my friend. How are you doing?
Hi, Mike. Fantastic. Thanks for having me again, and it's great to hear Giannis back online as well.
Hi, Mikey.
Hello.
Listen, it's great to do the show with the two of you. You know, after that loss on Friday night, I'm thinking, you know, sometimes I think about this, like, oh, now I got to do a show. But yep. After that situation goes by, say maybe 8 hours, I'm feeling, no, I actually really want to do a show because I want to talk about this because we're going to really break it down. We're going to figure out, we know what went wrong, and we're going to talk about it, and then we're going to move on. I want to talk about this match, and then we are going to move on. We are going to be talking about some big picture stuff, but I also obviously want to hone in on this one match. So we're going to be looking at it in two different ways. We're going to be looking at the problems defending set pieces and giving up penalties, but we're also just going to be talking about overall just this one match, and once the match is done, we move on from that. So Mike, I just want to get your overall thoughts, just your opening thoughts on the match Friday night.
Again, I could only listen to it. Didn't get any visual or any sort of stream for the match. But from what I heard, we started off brightly. But, you know, after the first goal was conceded, especially like I just heard y'all talking about the set piece plays. It just kind of seemed from then on, it was just kind of like a cascading snowball effect where one thing led to another, one mistake led to another. It just could not bounce back from it. And one goal down went to five goals down. And I can't say I didn't see it coming. For some reason, after three great wins on the trot, I was just something inside me knew that we were going to get trounced. And I hate to say that because overtly I was very positive saying, hey, we're going to win 1-0. We're going to win 2-1 again. It's going to be great. But inside, realistically, I don't know why I felt it. I just knew set pieces against Brighton were really going to, you know, come back to haunt us in this, and they did. And so overall, I think it was a pretty abysmal performance, and it's one of those ones that I'll be quick to forget and hopefully we'll never have to relive something like that again, because after going three games and starting to really turn the tide and the fans are getting behind the team again, all these Fulham forums, everyone's finally in a good mood again. And then this just went straight back to the same old script again of us just getting beaten on set plays and just having lackluster defending. So overall, pretty abysmal. But I'm looking forward to talking about it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about it too, Mike. And what's interesting, because I was thinking about while this was all going on, David and I talked about this on the preview show. I watched a good amount of video on Brighton and Hove Albion. I can't tell you how many goals I saw them score off of set pieces. They are prolific at scoring on set pieces. They are excellent at it. That was my biggest fear going into this match, and it really played itself out. And that's what's disappointing, because I'm sure, you know, obviously Slavica was prepared for it, but he can't make them defend better. He can prepare them, but then it's really up to the players. Anyone that has seen Brighton would know that this is a strength of theirs, and this is a true team. Brighton and Hove Albion aren't this highly incredibly talented team, but they play together as a team, and they deserve to be where they are. You know, the sum is what makes up this team. It really is. It's all about the players. There is no superstar there. They play together, and it really played itself up. You know, and when you look at the stats, they're going to make you sick, because we're going to go through the stats, and you're going to say, well, some of the stats make it look like how in the heck did Fulham lose 5-0? So we'll get to that in a little bit. But, Giannis, I want to go back to you, because I really haven't given you a chance to share your overall thoughts on the result. Because, again, we didn't get a chance to watch it. Hopefully you got a chance to listen to it.
Yep.
I did send you the highlights. Hopefully you got a chance to see that. Yep. But just talk about the result itself.
A bit of a head scratcher, to be honest. I mean, we had a very good first 20, 25 minutes. We seemed to dominate play. Our fans were in good voice. And what I think has been a microcosm of the season was the penalty, because Stearman gave it away. And Stearman was a player that I was excited to get into Fulham. But to be pretty honest, he's been an abject disappointment. He's not
Absolutely.
Played those, but he's been in and out of the lineup, and that penalty was just a microcosm of everything that's gone wrong with this season and sort of what's gone wrong with our season. And it was it's such a backbreaker, because you're dominating and you know that a goal is coming, and then all of a sudden out of nothing you gift a penalty kick. And once they'd scored that, Hamid scored that, their tails were up. And it looked like when he scored the second one, collectively our heads dropped. And just looked it was almost as if the players looked, look, we've put all that effort in, we've been in the ascendancy, and we blow it in ridiculous fashion. And I felt very sorry for the Fulham fans, who were full of voice.
Over 2,000, by the way.
Tremendous,
over 2,000.
Tremendous support.
Tremendous.
They did a fantastic job. And I don't blame any of them for being pissed off on the way back, because they'd have been very excited. Friday night game, Sky Sports. We've been playing well against a team that desperately needed to beat us. And we, to all intents and purposes, apart from the first 29 minutes, we laid an egg. And it's a very disappointing result, but a bit of a head scratcher, because we're not five goals worse than them. They know
Absolutely
it.
Absolutely not.
We know it. And sometimes the stats do lie. But at the end of the day, those stats don't matter. It's how many goals go in the back of the net. And unfortunately,
That's
we've
right.
got five less than them.
That's right, and that's the bottom line. It's, you know, as David Hollywood would always say, the table doesn't lie. The result doesn't lie. It's 5-0, and it's a hammering. You know, again, we could talk about how they played well in the first 25 minutes, and I'm here to tell you, I think that's what frustrates me, Giannis, is that listening to the match, I'm thinking, we're going to get something out of this match. At worst, we're going to get a draw. That's what I was thinking while listening to the match. So that's why it's so disappointing. Like you said, it's a head-scratcher because it was there for them. It was definitely there for them. That's what's crazy about this. But let's move on. Let's talk about the starting 11. I want to do this twofold with you and then Mike.
Yep.
Share with me your thoughts on the starting 11, but also, how much of a loss was Rohan Ince, Michael Maddle, and Tom Kearney, who were not available for this match? So I want you to talk about the starting 11, but I also want to get your thoughts about not having those three players for this match.
They're big losses, Russ, but if we're going to, if the absence of Maddle and Kearney and Ince is explainable to a 5-0 defeat away from home to Brighton, then we all need our heads chopped off. Because we had enough quality out there in the lineup where we could have wanted anything they were going to come at. It's not like we didn't have any strikers. You've got Tunnicliffe, Parker, O'Hara, and Hyman. They're good midfielders. The back four is very, very experienced. We've got our number one keeper in. Yeah, did we miss those players? Yes. But would they have made the difference? Well, you could say we could have scored first and then maybe burst their bubble and what have you. But ifs and buts and all that nonsense. I mean, the absence of three players shouldn't mean a 5-0 defeat, especially as I thought we had a decent, you know, you've got players like Vegan Christensen and Baird and Corley on the bench. We had enough depth there. So did it hurt us? Yes, but not to the extent that we'll lose 5-0. Now, that would just be making excuses for a rotten scoreline.
See, I totally agree with that, Giannis. It did hurt, but that doesn't take away from the fact that they should have not lost 5-0. I mean, they should have done better. It hurts, like you said, it hurts. But come on, there's enough quality there that they should still, without those three players, get something out of the match. And to lose 5-0 is just unacceptable. And
absolutely,
I'm angry about that because it was there for them. You know, the writing was on the wall. Mike, I'm going to go to you in just 1 second because you mentioned this. The writing's on the wall. We've won 3 in a row. You know, you're going to get that match that comes back, and unfortunately this is what happened, but you know, still, it was there for them. That's what drives me nuts. It was there for them. Mike, share with me your thoughts on the starting 11, also our discussion about not having those three players available.
I completely agree with Giannis. I mean, yes, Ince and Maddle and all them, it's a big loss, and you lose a lot of experience, a lot of physicality. You're throwing guys like Hindman in there who do honestly lack the physical strength to battle with some of these guys. You've got Parker and O'Hara in there. Both are, you know, they're not the quickest players in the pitch. They play very similarly, so the dynamic between each other is not as fluid as if you had like a Tom Kearney and a Parker or a Tom Kearney and an O'Hara. But again, if we're seriously trying to stay in this league and be competitive, you cannot be relying on three players to make or break it. And when they're not playing, you lose 5-0. I mean, that's just, for any team, that's just embarrassing. So I don't think we can really say too much about missing players being the reason why this consistent set piece, piss poor defending all season long has been our problem. So overall, I mean, I looked at the starting 11, even without those three players, and I thought, you know what, this team could actually go out there and win it at first. I mean, in my head, like I said earlier, I just knew we were going to lose, and I hate to be negative like that. I just had that feeling. They've done it to us so often. Fulham has done this so often where we get super pumped up, everyone starts getting ready and excited again, and then it's deflated all the time. So, overall, the starting 11, I mean, you've got our strike force up there, McCormack and Belly. When they're playing, usually you think we're going to score at least one. We're at least going to get something back there. Whether or not they're the goal scorers, they're at least assisting other players by getting in the right positions. Tunnicliffe, I've been a big fan of his, so I was glad to see him still playing. Even though he lacks some of the actual finesse, he's got a lot of the fighting spirit that we need to see. But overall, I think the biggest thing for me was our back four. Looking at Ream, Amorebieta, Stearman, and Fredericks, I don't think Fredericks provides much more than pace. And I'm not too surprised that once we start getting the set pieces and they start putting up their bigger players like Dunk up front to try and get a header to the ball, I'm not surprised the set pieces came to to bite us in the end. So overall, I mean, I think he put out one of the best 11 that he could have with what he had. But seeing Christensen on the bench, and I'm not a big fan of Garbutt. I know he's let us down quite a bit, but it might have been a good game for him instead of Fredericks. But overall, the 11 was all right. But I don't think, regardless of who you put in this team lineup, I just think that that match was one for Brighton and one for us to lose, unfortunately.
Okay. Very good analysis there, my friend. All right. Let's now go through this match. We're going to go through all five goals. We're going to go through everything. Giannis, I'm going to start with you. Let's start with the first half. Like we've mentioned, Fulham were controlling the match for about the first 25 minutes. I didn't see this situation coming up, but it came 4 minutes later in the 29th minute. You have James Wilson going down in the box. Richard Stearman briefly seemed to put his hands on him. Again, if you watch the replay, you'll see that he does put his hands on him, but Wilson went down very easily. Let's be honest here. Brighton is awarded the penalty, and Tomer Hamed scores the goal that really, at that point, you know, obviously they score four more, but this really set the tone. At this point, I've been asking the question. I also want to get your thoughts on this, Giannis, and I put this on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. I watched Jamie Vardy play for Leicester City, and he went down, yeah, and he was given a yellow for simulation. I'm thinking, what is the difference between that situation and the James Wilson situation? So feel free to share your thoughts on that as well, because I think they're very similar. That's just my thought. I'm curious your thoughts on it. And just share your thoughts on this situation. Was it a penalty?
I don't think it was. I don't think it was. I thought, I thought it was minimal. It was a minimal contact, and he's gone down like he's been shot. But I think in many ways Fulham are victims of the fact that we've given away so many penalties. I just think that referees now look at any little challenge in the box and they give it. And it was a soft penalty. I mean, that's in any bloody language. The problem was, and I thought about something, you know, last night. Slava, a few weeks after taking over, said that this team was scared. It was, you know, and I think that's what it is. It's fragile. It doesn't have a lot of resilience in it. And, you know, ordinarily, you know, half an hour into a game with 2,000 fans following you and cheering to the hill, going one down to a penalty, you go, okay, let's brush ourselves off and come back in this. But it knocked the stuffing out of us. We were never back in it. I mean, it was only a few minutes later that Hemed got the second.
Yep.
And then I mean, and I got to, again, Slav, I'm going to give a lot of credit because he at the end, he was man enough to say, look, we conceded five. We could have conceded a lot more. I'm sure that the changing room was very blue. The language was very blue at the end of the game. And I'm sure that the practice tomorrow, as they do the practice walkthrough for the Ipswich game on Tuesday, he'll have a few choice words to say. Interestingly, somebody on Facebook put something that made me laugh last night, one of the forums, and said, well, at least we can't blame Dan Byrne. And of course, he was right. You know, Byrne didn't even make the 18. And I think he's going to make, look, Milton Keynes got a point yesterday, but they're going to have to run the table to stay up.
Sure.
Would not be surprised if Slava rings the changes on Tuesday night and sends a very blunt message to the players that this just isn't acceptable and you're playing for your jobs now. We might be safe, more or less, but if you want to be back in next year, I need to see a lot more. But it was a soft penalty. I wouldn't have given it. Russ, I wouldn't have given it, but Stearman's had an awful year, and the ref's given it, and what are you going to do?
Yeah, no, listen, I hear you, and I agree with you that it's a soft penalty, but it also does go back to the head coach reaction that Savisa was talking about. Listen, you know, he put him in that situation by putting his hands on him. He gave the referee an opportunity to make a decision. And
right.
That, to me, is on Stearman, Giannis.
Yeah, it is. And I feel for the lad because I happen to think he's a decent player. But sometimes what happens is you go to a club and the fit just isn't there.
Right.
And we've seen this often enough. And the fit, for whatever reason, has not been there for Stearman. He's just not played well. And he's one of the first players that I think that Slava will look to get rid of at the end of the year, unless he sees something redeeming there. I'm not sure. I know that there's probably going to be a lot of cleaning of house, but nonetheless, it was a soft penalty, and we go a goal down after half an hour, and we really should be able to bounce back from that. But unfortunately for us, things just got from bad to worse.
Absolutely, and he's going to have to think, I'm talking about Savisa, about the future of Richard Stearman, because, like you said, it just might not be the right fit, Giannis, and that's fine. And I'm thinking about a lot of these defenders. It just might not be the right fit. They were good in their former teams, but for whatever reason, coming here has not been good enough. All of those defenders, you know, the one exception for me is Michael Mantle at this point. Michael Mantle, I think, has been very good. But beyond him, we can look at all these defenders. It just isn't good enough. All right, over to you, Mike. Your thoughts on the penalty. Should it have been called?
Absolutely not. It was extremely soft, you know, and it's one of those ones where it kind of sets the precedence for the whole game, where if you're going to call that, you're going to be sure that this ref's going to call almost everything. He obviously doesn't want to see any sort of anything that could be potentially reviewed and said that was a penalty. I don't know what he was thinking, but to be fair to him, Stearman did touch the lad with his hands in a precarious position, and whether or not he did anything to actually affect the run of play or the man's center of gravity making him fall, I think was very, very soft, and I think that's what really turned the game in favor of Brighton. But, you know, Stearman needs to be more aware that, and everyone needs to be more aware that players in the game that has evolved to become are going to do that. They're going to dive. They're going to fall down easily. They're going to try and get the penalty kick because they're doing what's best for themselves and for their team. And I can't blame, the player for falling down like that. But if you really listen to it, and I'm sure when we see the replay, there's going to be almost absolutely nothing in it. So it's definitely Stearman's fault for putting himself in a position and putting the referee in a position in which he had to make that call. But at the same time, I feel like some of these referees need to have a bit more of a backbone and, you know, really set a standard for what is a penalty kick and what is a free kick. I mean, if it's outside of the box, I gotcha. But if you're talking about a shot from 12 feet away, it's almost a certain goal for most of the time. So you're basically giving a goal away. So I mean, they need to be a lot more strict on what they're considering to be penalty kicks. But at the same time, again, Stearman shouldn't have been even anywhere near in that position, and I'm looking forward to seeing the actual replay to see what happened rather than what we're just hearing. But what I do love about Slav is that it might be due to his lack of fluency in English, but like when he speaks, especially about after games like this, it's very blunt, it's to the point, and he's not going to dance around it because he knows it's just not good enough. And I think come to this summer, besides Michael Mantle, I think a lot of these players here are either going to be finding themselves with very minimal playing time, loaned out, or just completely off of Fulham books. And I haven't seen anything this summer or this year that will kind of really cement their place this summer with the team. So it's going to be a very interesting summer for Fulham should we stay up, and I hope we do. As Yana said, Dons would really have to be putting on some sort of a show to try and make this a battle for us to be dragged back into it. But I'm pretty upset with how weak some of these set pieces in general have been being called, and it's just upsetting because we know how bad we are at how poor we are defending them. But at the end of the day, I think the back four, I don't know if it's just a problem inherent within Fulham and our defense, like our coaches on the defensive end, not just the manager, because we've seemed to, no matter who we pull into our back four, the last 3 to 4 seasons, our back four have been they've been the death of us. So something needs to be fixed now. And I know we've been saying this for years, but like it's getting to the point where this is just becoming all too predictable about what's going to happen. So we need to fix it as soon as possible, for sure.
I totally agree. And but one other thing that I want to go right back to, Mike, that Giannis brought up that actually stood out, and I'm curious your thoughts on this. Reputation. Fulham now have given up 11 penalties. Does the ref possibly have that in the back of his mind when the situation comes up? Could he have been influenced by Fulham's past?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he was. I mean, you know, if you go back to the days of Roy Keane and Patrick Vieira, and you know, those two guys are big, heavy hitters. They were thugs out there on the pitch, for better or for worse. And so, when referees would have these guys, you know, on the pitch playing, you get a crunching tackle from Roy Keane, you just instantly think, oh, this is no one and done. This guy does it all the time. So that's – it's the same thing now. I mean, you look at Fulham, you look at their stats, and you're like, well, they've given away a lot of set pieces. They've given away 11 penalties. It's not just my eyes seeing this as being a penalty. I'm sure the other 10 were all similar. And if they all called penalties, I don't see why mine should be any different. They're obviously susceptible to it. Their players maybe get nervous, or they get they kind of lose awareness of what's going on. They often trip or foul or do something to stop the run of play. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he might be trying to be as objective as he can be, but I think at the end of the day, stats don't lie, and the referee may have taken a look at those or was well aware of it during the match and was keeping his eye out for things like that. So
exactly.
I wouldn't be too surprised if that was the case.
Yeah, and that's why I'm glad that Giannis brought that up, because it really made me think. It's like, yeah, when you start to build a reputation, then going into the match, the ref is thinking, okay, I have to watch out for this. And then the situation
exactly.
comes up, he calls it. And very good point, Giannis, seriously, very good point. I'm going to go right back to you, because we're now going to talk about the second goal. It was, like you mentioned, 5 minutes later, Brighton made it 2-0, and I believe I'll have to go back and watch it, but I believe there was a foul that led to the free kick by Fernando Amorebieta. I think it was Amorebieta.
Yeah.
Anthony Knockhart delivered a very good free kick from 40 yards out that Tomer Hamed headed into the back of the net. Thoughts on the second goal given up by Fulham?
Free header. That's it. Free header. At that level, if it's the Icelandic seventh division, you might expect to see that. But a free header in a championship game, how many goals have we conceded from free headers?
Oh, man.
Set pieces this year. It's an absolute. It's almost. You know, it's almost like picking up, getting the first 11 men that you see in a park walking the dog, saying, "What are you doing for 90 minutes? Oh, come with me to Craven Cottage. You can play for Fulham." It's almost like nobody knows anybody else. I mean, there's absolutely no excuse for not picking up a player, for allowing a free header at that level. It's mind-numbing. No wonder Slav would be pulling his hair out. I mean, it's, you know, even at the basic level, at house league and what have you, you'd still be doing conniptions if, you know, cross comes over and someone just, you know, heads it in, you know, free head and unopposed. And so, you know, if 1-0 isn't the backbreaker, 2-0 certainly is, because that's, you know, you're going into half time, and unless you get something early in the second half, you're staring down the barrel.
Absolutely, Giannis. And what's interesting, right after the goal, they actually had a wonderful opportunity to make it 3-0 before the half, and thankfully Marcus
yep.
Bettinelli saved it. If he doesn't do that, they're going into the half down 3-0. But thankfully at that point, it's only 2-0. It's still manageable. It's still manageable,
yep.
2-0, but that's the halftime score, 2-0. And, Mike, I'm going to go back to you, because we're now going to transition to the second half. And it didn't take long. It was actually in the 54th minute. Again, another set piece, corner taken by Yuri Skalic, got to Bruno, who slammed it home to make it 3-0. Thoughts on the third goal by Brighton Hove Albion to put the match away? It was actually, you could say the match was away at 1-0, but this really, really did a number on us. Talk about this goal.
Yeah, right before I talk about this, I do just want to comment on Giannis's last piece there about the free headers.
Sure.
I mean, we did it to Lee Immers of Cardiff City the week before, a free header. The guy, man, just drifts off his post and heads it straight past Bettinelli. I mean, the free headers thing, it's getting to the point of just absolute, like, it's child's play at this point. These guys are just not being able to stick to a man and not being able to see that coming. I mean, we've been giving them away all season, so I completely agree there. And as for the third goal from the set piece, I have to see it in order to believe what I was hearing over the radio, because set pieces like that, if that ball is not delivered in perfectly and you get the chance to clear it, I'm not understanding how it's being cleared at anywhere away from the goal. I don't understand how the ball is being allowed any sort of time at that point to be set to a man's feet and for him to slam it home on a rebound. I mean, the moment that comes in, if someone's head isn't touching the ball or someone's from the opposition isn't got their foot to it, all defenders need to close down every single angle from that ball and just get it out of there. We don't need to have possession and running out of the box. We don't need to control it and do two passes and back to the keeper. But no, just get it out of there. Often, too many times we've been scored on set pieces, not because the guy who strikes the ball, like a Ross McCormick goal, goes straight into the net, but it's because they lob it in there, it gets stuck on the ground, everyone's trying to kick at this hack at the ball, and suddenly there's a toe poke that goes flying into the net. I think it comes down to the fact that our players, if that ball is not met immediately with a header or it doesn't go out of bounds or the goalkeeper doesn't save it, they get flustered. They don't know what to do when the ball suddenly just kind of gets like a ping pong ball knocked all around in front of all of these players. And I hate to say, you got to go back to the rudimentary idea of just kick it out. Get yourself some space. Give yourself a few seconds to regroup, because what we're not doing is taking a calm, cool, collected, okay, here's the ball incoming, here it comes, all right, it's on the ground, get it out. No, these guys seem to get flustered, they freeze up, and they just start to, you know, not only are you blocking Betts' vision now, but you're not doing anything productive. So I think this goal is not so much a Brighton success story as it is yet another Fulham defensive failure. And it's just one of those ones, when you look back at the replay, I'm sure it's completely avoidable. And it's just going to be a mess to watch, for sure.
I'm sure it is, Mike. Very good analysis there. And, Yanis, I'm going to go to you, because this, to me, was the backbreaker. You know, Fulham obviously lose 5-0, and we could go back to the first two goals. This, to me, was the one that just put the match away, and I think it was preventable. I look forward to watching the replay. I've seen the highlights of it. Watching it back, it was nauseating watching this third goal go in. Talk about this situation.
It's a corner. It's a far post corner, and if you look at it, it looks like O'Hara's right there to head it out, and he's missed it. He's missed it. Bruno's taken a little touch, and he smashed it home. I think that was his first goal of the bloody season, for crying out loud. And it's comical. It's like watching the Stooges play. And I'm an O'Hara fan. I am. But it's just, it's a microcosm of the sort of abject, rank, bad, awful, piss-poor defending. I mean, we score so many goals. I mean, McCormack and Dembele have done such a great job up front, and yet we're like the Titanic at the back. All we need is DiCaprio and Winslet, and we'd have the script written. It's a mess. It's an absolute mess. And you know what? Let's be honest. How many games are you ever going to lose if you keep a clean sheet? Answer, none. And it's no good us scoring goals at will like we do, like we have a tendency to do, and then, concede the most stupid goals. And I think the thing that annoys me the most is that we take a load of fans, you know, these are fans, many of these fans went up to Deepdale to cheer us on against Preston, you know, have gone up to Middlesbrough, you know, in the far northwest. I mean, gone all around the country, and Brighton's a relatively short journey, but on a Friday night, how much fun is that? Go down to Brighton for the day, you know, and all that sort of stuff, to get stuff like cheap turkeys. Now, the good news for me is that we can bounce back on the saddle Tuesday night against Ipswich. And Ipswich really don't, I mean, they're 8 points off Sheffield Wednesday and six. So they're in eighth place, but to all intents and purposes, the chances of making the playoffs are done. So they're not exactly going to be the most motivated bunch, but this is a good chance for us to rebound. And if we do rebound, maybe that'll show that Friday's game was a one-off, because we've got some tremendously winnable games coming up with Forest and Bolton and Brentford. So let's hope we can sort of slide, you know, get back to winning ways. But nonetheless, it's still very, very disappointing. And the fans, I know, were really excited about it.
Right. Right, Yanis, and listen, before we end the show, you have to do your Mick McCarthy, please, before we end the show.
Oh,
I need that, okay?
It's been a while since I've had it. Yeah, it's a Tuesday night. We've got Fulham coming in. I'm Mick McCarthy, and I think we're going to stop the bastards.
I needed that. I really needed that, my friend. That was great. All right, guys, let's move on. And after going down 3-0, what's interesting here, Fulham actually had three opportunities to score. You had the one by Ross McCormack. Then you had the very good opportunity from LVC. And Emerson Hyman, another good opportunity by him, but for whatever reason could not score to make it 3-1. And then, as you know, after that, Mike, I'm going to go over to you in the 79th minute. You Brighton make it 4-0 as Dale Stephens' shot hits Tim Ream, bounced, and then it's bouncing off of Tomer Hamed. For me, I've watched this several times. It does look like it's offside, but the goal was given. Talk about the goal.
It was an offside. He was right level with the steerman, actually, when that came in. And it's just one of those ones that, of all the goals that were scored today, this was the one that, when this goes in, I have no qualms with it. Is it a silly goal? Yes. Do I believe that it should have happened? No. But it's just one of those ones where the man was in the right place at the right time. There was a through ball, a pass right through the defense. He just guides it off of his right boot, and it goes in past Betts. I mean, it's one of those ones that on the run of play, of all five goals, that's the most one, like, you know what, forget about it. This is just, like, that one's going in. It happens. It's not as embarrassing as the third goal where Bruno gets 5 seconds in the box and everyone's staring at the ball, and then he pounces it in. I mean, this goal is just one of those ones where there's a deflection, the defense is kind of out of loops at this point, and the ball just gets slid right to him, and he guides it in. I mean, overall, this goal, if we're going to talk about any of them, let's let this one go in out of all five, because it just shows our defense. Like, after they cleared the ball, our defense shut down. They became static. No one was moving. No one was going to the ball. This guy stays level with Stearman, and he guides it in as the ball is just passed between four of our defenders right to his foot, and he puts the ball in the net. So it just goes back to the fact that I think at this point in the game, our team shut down. Defensively, we're not moving anymore, and these guys are just kind of in this mentality of, well, nothing we can do is going to stop it, and then they score a fourth goal. So it's just one of those ones where you see it happen, and I just sit there and kind of go, huh, okay, move on. Like, it's gotten to the point now where, of all the goals, this is the least silly, in my opinion.
Okay, very good. Giannis, your thoughts on the fourth goal?
Ho-hum.
Yeah.
Ho-hum. I mean, yeah, it was a decent goal, but by that time, it's over. Yeah,
it's done,
like the cheap turkey when the mother-in-law comes around, except make sure it's undercooked so that you give a botulism. But, it was, and then it was just, I got the feeling then when that fourth went in, I thought, oh, no. This could be, we could be in for a real bloody hiding here. Although 4-0, still a hiding. But, having said that, I mean, the defenders have to sit in the changing rooms after the game and say, like, are we conceding 5 goals to Brighton? Like, come on. You know, I mean, this is a championship game. When it's not like we're going to, you know, Barcelona. I mean, to be honest, in that form, Barcelona would score 15 on us. It was poor, and we can blame the defenders, but the midfield has to take a responsibility as well, because defending is a collective team responsibility, and it's just not been there this year. It's just not been good enough, and I was sure that, as I said, Slava would have had some choice words in the change rooms afterwards, and probably at training. They probably trained today, actually. And he would have gone through a couple of things and said, look, this can't go on. So I'm hoping when they come to my team on Tuesday night, they'll be ready. But it remains to be seen that it was disappointing. When the fourth went in, I thought, oh, they're going to score a fifth.
Okay, very good. And listen, we don't have to really talk about the fifth. I'm just going to share quickly. To add insult to injury, Anthony Nockhart scored to make it 5-0 in the 87th minute. It's over. It was over, like you said. We could say it's over after 1-0, but it really, at that point, it's just adding on 5-0, and it brought me back to that Hull City match a few years ago against for Fulham, and I was really angry after that, and this brought me right back there. And listen, the fans were angry after this match, you know, and like you said, Giannis, I wouldn't blame the fans who were there to be angry, because you know, you go down there. You know, if you support them at Deepdale, Preston North End match, and then you come back and this is what you get. It's horrible. Anyways,
yeah.
Let's now look at the full-time stats. I definitely want your thoughts on this, because I'm just going to go through it and want to see what sticks out with you guys. And, Mike, I'll start with you, but I'll just go through it real quick. Possession. Fulham had 58% to 42% for Brighton. Total shots in favor of Brighton, 19-8. On target, 11 for Brighton, 3 for Fulham. Corners. 8 for Brighton, 3 for Fulham. Crosses, 14-8 in favor of Brighton. Tackles, 17 for Fulham, 10 for Brighton. Attempted passes, 575 for Fulham, 412 for Brighton and Hove Albion. Attacking passes, 231 to 162 in favor of Fulham. This is a stat that surprised me. Passing accuracy, 83% for Fulham, 79% for Brighton. Aerial duels, 15-5 in favor of Fulham. And fouls, 10-9. Brighton had more fouls. All right, Mr. O'Connor, what stands out to you from the full-time stats?
It's easy to have a passing accuracy of 83% when you're just passing side to side and backwards. so it's not too surprising for me to hear that. I think what's really interesting is the fact that Brighton had less passes overall. I think you said it was 412. And that just shows how much more clinical they are. They had 412 to the 570 or 563, whatever it was, about 100 more passes from Fulham, and they were just more clinical, which obviously shows in the five-goal deficit that we sustained. And the fact that they have they're allowed 19 shots, 11 which are on target, and they put five in the net. I mean, that's almost a 50% goal return for your shots on target. I mean, if you're going to let these guys, if you're going to keep 58% of the possession, yet somehow let them shoot 19 times and get 11 shots on target, you know, you're asking too much of Betts to say, keep all 11 of them out. It's going to happen, especially if you're giving away set pieces like it's charity. So the shots on target, if you look at 11 shots on target, those are going to go in. They're bound to happen. We only get three shots on target. Okay, what are the chances that they put in five, we put in all three, they still win 5-3? We're not being effective enough with our shots. They're not accurate enough. We're not getting ourselves in position to have really done any damage to their goal mouth. And then when it comes to passing accuracy, we're 83%, yet somehow a team with 412 passes end up being more clinical and putting 11 on target and 5 in the goal. So overall, possession means nothing if you don't do anything with the ball. And I think that's really what this comes down to. The first 20 minutes or so, we were in the ascendancy. We were doing well. But it obviously proves that you don't need the possession and you don't need the time with the ball in order to make it count. So I think overall, good job to Brighton for having the lesser of the time with the possession but making it count when they need to do. So.
Listen, we see this all the time, Mike, with Leicester City.
Yep,
they rarely have more possession. It's what they do with the possession when they have it that counts. Like you said, it's being clinical. I'm glad that you brought that up because the passing accuracy is where you want it to be. But it's really not about the passing accuracy. It's what you do with that amount of passing. You can have all the passing you want. You can have it be inaccurate. It's what you do with it that makes all the difference in the world. Very good stuff from you. Giannis, what stands out to you from the full-time stats?
Well, I mean, if you assess it, it all looks positive, doesn't it? I mean, you know, the possession is 58, you know, the passing accuracy, but that just goes to show it's you know, you can have as many stats as you want, but it's the number of goals you score that count, and it'll be frustrating for Slava, and probably, you know, I'm not a mind reader, but I bet he can't wait till the end of the year. He's probably gone to the local Walmart or Asda, and he's bought himself six brooms and some pans. Said, right, I've got to do some sweeping when this bloody season's over, because this is a nonsense. And it's, having said that, though, you know, let's look back to the last few wins. You know, had we scored a goal in the first 25 minutes, you know, where we were in the ascendancy in terms of possession and chances created and movement, then this could have been a different story. Let's, you know, when you're in the ascendancy, you've got to take advantage of that. Because it's only going to last for so much. How often do we see teams dominating games and then before you know it, they get caught on the break and it's 1-0? So that's where I suppose Slava is going to talk about, look, if we take charge early on, we've got to score. We've got to get a reward for our domination, because if we don't, the longer the game goes in, the more likely it is that we're going to give up a daft goal or a silly goal. But as I said, the good news is that we can hop back on that horse on Tuesday, and I'm expecting a much better effort, but I am expecting a different lineup.
Okay, very good, Giannis. And we're actually going to end the show by talking a little bit about that match, because I want to get your thoughts and Mike's thoughts on that. But what I'd like to do, again, we're not going to rate the players, obviously. We have not seen the replay. We're not going to do that. But, Mike, I want to get your thoughts on Slavica in this match, his approach in this match, and just your overall thoughts on how he managed the match. And obviously it didn't work out well for him, but how do you think he prepared the team? And just your overall thoughts on his preparation and and you know, and his job as being the head coach for this match. What? How much of the blame do you put on him in this match? I'm curious.
I actually put zero blame on the man. You know, after going in 2-0 down to the halftime, you know, 2-0 is one of those results. It's known as the most dangerous lead in virtually any sport that scores similarly to football. Because, you know, a team that is leading 2-0 more than likely will get scored on in the next third goal, more than likely be scored on them. And then you're talking about a one-goal deficit that can be erased with the blink of an eye and some quick movement and passing. So he started changing it up in the second half. He starts bringing in Baird, Christensen, and Woodrow. And, you know, he spaced it out pretty well. You got Christensen, I'm looking at the stats here, coming in at the 58th minute, Baird coming in on the 64th, and Woodrow to change it up on the 75th. And Slavisa is a very intelligent man. I think we all know that. We are very fortunate to have him as our head coach. And, you know, I've said this about other managers in the past, but I truly feel like Fulham's future is much brighter with this man, and that it's not we have to remember, and we say this about every new coach, it's not his team. It's not his team. Give him the summer. Let him bring in his own players. Let him get rid of the junk. And I think that Slavisa is doing a very good job, as previously seen in the last three matches with these guys, getting his method across, getting his what he how he wants to play, how he sees us moving forward. And I place all the blame on the players. I really do, because he can say whatever he wants. And this goes for any manager, not just Slavisa. You can say whatever you want to the players before the match, during the match, halftime, and afterwards. But unless these guys don't come out to play, they don't get their heads out of their rear ends. I mean, it's not his fault. He can only do so much on the touchline. So, you know, I think that he's always very calm and composed. He's always trying to change up the formation, change up the way his players play, regardless of what the score is. And he never strikes me as a man that even if we're down 4-0, he doesn't just give up and say, I can't wait for the whistle. He's always trying to make something work. He's always thinking. So, you know, overall, I think Slavisa did an all right job, and it's going to be a real test of his mettle to see how he, as a coach with these players, with the amount of games we have left in the position we are, bounces back from this. So I'm pretty interested to see what he's going to do to remedy the situation come Tuesday. But overall, I place absolutely zero blame on him, and I think it all lies at the feet of the players who really let down the fans, the club, and Slavisa himself.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I'm glad that you mentioned the changes that he made in the second half. He was trying.
He was trying to
fix the problem. So you put 100% of the blame on the players. You know, this is more about them. Giannis, where do you fall on this with Slavisa in this match? Is this really about the players, or do you put some blame on Slavisa?
No, I'm gonna throw the players under the bus for this one. I think, you know, they are still professionals. You know, we're 41, 42 games into a season. They should know how to defend set pieces. Many of them have got so much experience. They should know what to do, where to do, how to do it, even with a manager that's only been in for a few months. And we've had some loan signings. I think that they, and to be fair, I'm going to give maybe the Fulham players a bit of credit here. I'm sure that they know that what they're doing isn't right, and that they're not playing well, and they're letting their club down, they're letting their fans down. But if you're looking, you know, saying looking forward to the Ipswich game, Ipswich are on a wretched run of form right now. They've won two of their last 12. And in that space, they've scored 8 goals. And in two games ago, they lost 3-1 at home to Brentford and actually drew 0-0 with Charlton. So they're really struggling. And this is, I think, a very winnable game. They've gone from being a team that was in the top three that really you should have said that was, you know, comsy comsa maybe to make it the automatic spots, to a team that's now on the outside looking in and probably won't make the promotion playoff places. So it's been a very disappointing end. And they're going to be very much down on their dumps. They've not won since beating Blackburn 6 games ago, and then their previous win before that was back in February over Reading, 2-1. So Slava's going to tell the players this is a really winnable game, because Ipswich are going to be, you know, very down in the dumps right now.
I completely agree with you. I'm sorry to break in, because I'm looking at this match, and I've looked at what's been going on with Ipswich Town lately. it's there for them. This, they should treat this like they treated the Preston North End match. That was a winnable match. This is a winnable match.
Exactly.
The harder match was obviously the Brighton match, but they can go there. They can go there and win this match. I totally agree with you, and it'll be interesting to see what he's going to come up with, who he's going to play. Like you mentioned at the beginning of the show, who's he going to play? You know, will he make household changes? Will he be that angry that he's really going to change things up? It'll be interesting to see what he does. Mike, what are your thoughts about the Ipswich Town match, real quick?
Yeah, this is the one. Much like I felt like we were going to lose this one against Brighton. Now, dare I say, I couldn't have picked a 5-0 drubbing, but I thought we were going to lose it. This is the match for us. We're going to come back. We're going to bounce back and win this 3-0 or 2-0. I think we'll actually keep a clean sheet. As Giannis points out, I mean, they are on absolutely wretched form. They are a team that's really got their tail between their legs, and you know, they're still 8 points behind sixth place. They're not gonna catch them at this point of the season, and I think that we're gonna end up beating Ipswich. And I think this 5-0 loss, I think Slavisa is gonna have said what he needed to say in the manner that he does, which is probably very stern. Not your friend. He's not like what Kit was, where he was kind of your pal, I see him, and to talk to people as much as I like Kit. No, Slavisa is the one that's going to command their attention, and he's going to make them well aware and ashamed of themselves of what happened. And I think they're going to really respond to it, and I think that he's going to make some changes to the starting 11. I think you're not going to see Heinemann, I don't think, playing in this next match. Not to any fault of his own. I just don't think he's ready, especially for a game we need to win. I think you'll see a couple of changes here or there to positions, but I think we're going to come out and we're going to just give Ipswich a real game, and we're going to control the entire thing, where the stats will be in our favor and the result will be too. So I'm looking forward to it, and I think we're going to bounce back immediately.
Very good there, Mike. And what I see this match is a great opportunity. I'm going to call it a character match. This is an opportunity to see for Slavisa to really evaluate who's going to be there long term. This is a chance after a drubbing. If you can come back and get a victory, that shows character. And let's see what type of character these players have. This is, for me, it's all about character. It's a character match. They can go there and win if they have the right mentality. They have to put this match behind them. You know, this is something that you know, again, I'm going to use the New England Patriots as an example. There have been several times where they've had bad losses and they would bury the ball. This is something where you just forget about it. You move on. We've already talked about it. You now have to be completely focused on Ipswich Town because they can win this match. They totally can. All right, guys, we only have a little over 3 minutes left. Let's end with some final thoughts. Mr. Janaeus, I'll start with you. Any final thoughts?
No. I mean, no. It's you walk the dog. You slip over on the dog shit. It ends up all over your body. You get up and you wipe it off. And that's the way we've got to approach what just happened and what we're going to go into now. We've got some lovely winnable games coming up. I'm sure the players are embarrassed about what happened on Friday night. And for the fans that will be travelling to Portman Road on Tuesday night, I'm sure they're going to want to, you know, redeem themselves. And I'm going to expect that in the form of a much improved performance and 3 points.
Okay, excellent there, Giannis. Mike, final thoughts?
Nothing more than we've already spoke about. It feels good to kind of get it off of my shoulders to kind of let out some of the frustration.
It does, doesn't it?
Because no one around me really understands here about what it is to be a Fulham supporter, especially in the position we're in. So it just felt good to let this one out. And
absolutely.
I think we've kind of put it to rest, and we'll just, you know, look forward to Ipswich with nothing but optimism and hopefully 3 points coming to Fulham. So,
hurrah!
Okay, very good. Guys, we only have 2 minutes left. My final thought involves a prediction I made a little while ago. I said Fulham would end the season with 5 wins. Guys, I'm at 3. I have 2 more. And if David Holly, if you're listening, I'm going to get those final 2, and you will never, ever hear the end of it. That's my final thought.
Oh, I've got more final thought here, Russ.
Okay.
I thought it was fabulous seeing Steve Sidwell come off the bench. I know that there were rumors that David was jumping up and down like a headless chicken, very, very happy at that. And lamenting the fact that he's not in black and white anymore. So who knows, David, you never know, end of the season, maybe he'll be back with us next year.
Okay. Very good there, my friend. Very good. Excellent. Great show, guys, from both of you. I really enjoyed that. And, Mike, I agree with you. I think this is great to do because we get a chance to get it off of our chest, and now we can move on and enjoy the rest of our day. We're going to bury the ball figuratively. We're just going to move on from this. I wanted to do the show and move on. Now let's look forward to Ipswich Town for Fulham Football Club. But it's time to go. For Mike and Giannis, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers,
bye,
guys.
Bye.
Great show.
Bye,
great show.
Bye.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.